And good afternoon. This show is Live and Local. It's your connection to local performances. I'm Kevin Kelly. Thank you for joining us today. On the program today, coming up, I will be talking with two participants in a show of multiple dimensions. It's called Callings, and it features author William Gillespie doing some readings, songwriter and bandleader Ryan Groff of Elsinore, and Chandra Watkins, who will be playing her Viper electric violin. It's all happening Sunday night in downtown Champaign. We'll give you details, and I'll be talking with two of those who are going to do a live performance in our studio. But first, I will be talking in just a matter of minutes with classical guitarist Ana Vidović, who is Croatia-born and now living in Baltimore. She's going to be among the many guitarists playing at El Nora, the Guitar Festival at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. And her performance will be next Saturday, not 2 days from now, but on Saturday, September the 7th. Here is a sampling of her work. That's music by the Croatian composer, died about 20 years ago, I guess, born 1914. His name is Stjepan Šulek. The first of a three-movement piece called The Troubadours Three, and it was played here by guitarist Ana Vidović, who made that recording on the Naxos label as a winner of the first prize at the 1998 International Francisco Tárrega competition. And she is going to be playing at El Nora, the Guitar Festival at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts next weekend, not this coming, but next weekend, in a joint recital, or shared recital, I should say, with Jason Vio, fellow classical guitarist. That'll be on Saturday, September 7th, 11 o'clock in the morning. And she is my guest on this portion of Live and Local. We have her on the phone from Baltimore. Thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
You're sort of living in pretty near my own old stomping grounds. I lived in Pennsylvania and took some lessons in Baltimore. From somebody who taught at Peabody Conservatory, which is where you went to school. How did you end up heading to Peabody from Croatia?
Well, I was born in Croatia, and I lived there actually most of my life. I went to school there. I took lessons, guitar lessons, for many years, and I graduated at the academy, the Music Academy in Zagreb. And then I had to make a decision to go somewhere else. So, United States was one of the options. I always wanted to come here. I didn't know where. So I sent a couple of applications to different schools, and Peabody Conservatory was one of them. And Manuel Barreco taught there and is still teaching there now. And, it was sort of a dream to study with him. So I sent one of the applications there, and I was accepted. And so that's how I came to Baltimore. And after I graduated, I just stayed here.
So that's your base from which you do an awful lot of touring right now.
I live here most of the time, and then it's a good city to travel to and from. So it's a good base to be.
Tell me some of your experience with Manuel Barreco. We've got some of his recordings here from which we certainly air performances now and then. What did you find that you got particularly from him?
Well, many wonderful things. I spent four years there at Peabody, and when I came to the States, I wanted to work on, my musicality and do improve that, because until then, in Croatia, I was sort of studying a lot about the technical aspects of playing. So Manuel was wonderful to work with in many different ways, in musicality, you know, dealing with nerves on stage and how to handle that, and just many great things. And it was just a wonderful experience to be able to, you know, work with him and with such an amazing player and accomplished musician. So it's completely changed my perspective and how I thought of, you know, guitar playing before. It completely changed everything. So it was a very, very good time for me, and I really learned a lot.
Since you mentioned it, it's something that I've always been curious about, having been a sometime performer and not handled it so well, and I imagine other people might be curious too. Handling nerves on stage, what are some of the techniques that you learned, and is that something that was a problem for you before you started working with him, and so how do you handle it now?
Well, I think it's a very common problem issue, and a common issue for all the performers. Some of us get more nervous, some of us get a little bit less nervous, but I think we all get nervous, which is okay to a certain extent as long as it's not too much, it's not overwhelming. So, you know, the key in performing live is to be able to transfer the music to the audience, and sometimes when we get a little bit nervous, it's really hard to do that. So Manal was very helpful in that aspect, and I think most of it is really a state of mind. So as long as we are able to relax as much as possible before we go on stage and, you know, prepare well, be 200% prepared, the chances of getting nervous are less and less. So it's a lot of things that we need to do prior to going on stage, and just performing a lot and having the experience of performing a lot in front of people also helps. But I think most of it is really the state of mind and just being able to relax and being able to enjoy being on stage and just share the music and your experiences with the audience. I think that might be the key. And then the audience will respond to you in a very positive way. So it's sort of, you know, going back and forth. The artist gives something to the audience and the audience gives something back.
Do you have any kind of routine that you go through before performing? I mean, we sometimes hear about these about artists in different areas of performance, but is there something are there some things that you go through ritualistically before you go out on stage?
Well, that's a very good question. I don't really do anything specific. I just, like I said, you know, I try to prepare the music very well, and I try to play the music through many times before I go on stage. You know, sometimes I play for my friends or for my parents or whatever. So it's a lot of it is preparation, and then I just on the day of the concert I just try to relax as much as possible, and I like to play a lot before I go on stage just to have my hands warmed up really well. And I'll just relax. Relaxation is very, very important, and I'll try to really, you know, get myself into that state of mind and just try to relax. But a little bit of nervousness is okay, and I think the time when we're the most nervous is when we get on stage, and then throughout the concert everything changes and we get less and less and less nervous. So it's just a process that we go through. But to answer your question, no, I don't do anything specific on the day of the concert, just you know, regular things. So.
And no little superstitions where you touch this at a certain time or wear this article of clothing or anything like that?
No, I don't do that, no. But I do eat bananas, which I've been doing for many years because they say it's really good for you, and I think it relaxes you a little bit. So that's something that I like to do. But that's probably the only thing I do before the concert. So
you, just sort of this conversation reminded me of a question that I've occasionally wondered about, particularly with people who play stringed instruments, where your dexterity is so important to you, differently than, you know, say a trumpet or horn player. What do you do if you end up in a performance venue that is really cold and your hands don't want to move?
Yeah, that's a very good question. It's a very scary situation. I've had that situation a couple of times. and it's not fun. So, but it's part of what we do, and sometimes that will happen. So, sometimes during the winter, if I travel to a place that I know is going to be very, very cold, I'll take my gloves and have them on my hands, just before I go on stage. But if I don't have them, I'll just play. I'll just warm up my hands. I'll constantly play right before I go on stage, and so that my hands are warm. And sometimes I'll have my hands under the really, really hot water to have them warm. And I mean, there's a couple of things. But I think, something that really helps me is just to keep playing and playing and playing all the way up to the moment where I have to go on stage. And then, that's something that helps. So, but all kinds of situations happen. So that's one of them.
Well, thanks for indulging my, sort of bits of curiosity on these points. I started, I led into this conversation with some music by a countryman of yours, Stepan Shulik, of course, long gone. From this world. And I've read that you, as your career continues, as I'm sure all performers do, you continue working on broadening your repertoire. And that music, something that I imagine is not in everybody's repertoire. We're going to play some music by William Walton in a moment that may also not be in everybody's repertoire. But how do you go about choosing new music to learn and balancing it with things that could be called standards, let's say?
Well, I'll always try to have a variety of different composers and different musical styles, and I love to include the music of Croatian composers because that's where I'm from, so that's what I'm really familiar with, and I like to share that with the audiences because I'd like for them to get to know Croatian music as well. But there's when I choose the program that I will play, I'll try to have a little bit for a little bit of something for everybody because people like different things, and so sometimes I'll play Bach and then I'll play something modern and I'll play Spanish music and then I'll play Beatles, so I'll try to have everything in one place, and I think the audiences really appreciate that and they appreciate the variety. But Croatian music is very special to me, and that piece is one of really the most beautiful pieces I've ever seen, the piece by Stepan Shulik, and so I always want to include that into the program as well. So for me personally, it's just the keys to have the variety, and I'll always try to think about different people in the audience and what they would like to hear.
What's the prevalence of Croatian composers who write for the guitar? Is that, you said you like to feature their works, but is that music hard to find or not?
Yeah, it is hard to find. There actually are not many Croatian composers that have written for guitar, so that was one of the pieces that was introduced to me by my teacher, my Croatian teacher, Istvan Remer, that I've worked with for many years. And so, when I heard it, I immediately picked it up and I said, yes, I would love to. I would love to play this. But there is two more composers that have written for guitar, the pieces that I've played, but again, there's not too many. So, actually, my brother Victor, who is a guitarist as well, he's a composer. So, I love to play his music as well. So it's really important to be able to share that part of the world and with the audience and have them learn about Croatian music.
Well, I said something about some music by William Walton I want to play next. This also comes off of was this your first CD? Of recital?
That was the first international CD. I did a recording in Croatia growing up, but that was the first international CD that I did for Naxos, and it was part of the first prize that I won at the competition in Spain.
Well, it's a nice program, and this is some of the music that ends it. William Walton, I think it's the only piece he wrote for solo guitar.
Yeah, that's true. That was the only piece, yes.
This is the first of his five bagatelles for the instrument. Anna Vidovich is my guest. She's going to be at Elnora, the Guitar Festival at the Krannert Center, on Saturday, September 7th in the morning as part of that festival, and she's my guest here on Live and Local. That's the first of five bagatelles by William Walton, played by guitarist Anna Vidovich, my guest on Live and Local, who will be at the Krannert Center next weekend in a recital with Jason Vio. They'll be playing separate sets on Saturday morning. And I had asked you a little bit about how you choose repertoire. What's the state of your recording career at the moment? Are you doing some active recording? Are you concentrating primarily on touring recitals?
I'm actually mostly performing at the moment right now, and it's something that I really, really love to do, and I think it's a sort of a dream for every artist to be able to play concerts and travel and see different places and learn about different cultures and different countries. So I'm sort of really living that dream, and I'm very grateful for that. But I do occasionally I do recordings. The last recording I did was actually a live performance DVD that I did for a company called Melbay. And the reason why we did the DVD, the live performance, is because I think, you know, people like to, of course, hear the music, and that comes first, but they also like to see the performer as well. So, and especially guitarists, I think classical guitarists, they like to watch the hands, and they like to learn about the technique, and so that's why we wanted to do the live DVD. And maybe I'd love to do another one, so maybe in a year or so we'll do another live DVD as well.
When you make a recording, whether it's for just an audio recording on CD or a video recording, do you approach the performance any differently than if you were just playing in front of a live audience?
I try to approach it the same way, but it's really a very different thing, because in the studio you don't have the audience in front of you, and therefore I think the performance will sound different, and it will not be the same way as when you perform in front of the audience. So it's a very, very different thing, and also there's a lot of repeating, and you know, we rarely play the piece from the beginning till the end. And the recording is very, very different, and I personally don't enjoy it as much as live performing. So I wish I could, maybe one day I'll just do a live, you know, live concert CD, and because it's really for a performer, I think that's really what gives us, you know, that special feeling, just to be in front of the audience, to share the music, and it sounds different than in the studio. So, but I think, you know, if you're working with a really good engineer, and if you have that connection with the engineer, and if you're comfortable in the studio, and you know, I think it can become a really good recording. But it's just a different thing. So, but you know, I personally really do enjoy the live performing the most.
I guess I've often wondered whether how it feels to make a recording where you don't play even some of these shorter pieces straight through. How one manages to keep a consistent concept of a piece, where, you know, I assume you implied that you have a you know, might be a 3-4-5 minute piece, whatever, and you might be asked mm-hmm. to stop because something happened, or you may ask to stop because something happened. How do you manage mm-hmm. to keep a consistent concept of the piece in that situation?
Well, it's really difficult. It's really hard to do because we are asked to stop and to start from the beginning, and sometimes to start from a different place in the piece. Sometimes we have to start from the, you know, the middle part of the piece. So it's not easy, and it comes through like that. And so I think, you know, maybe there's a way to find maybe there was a way to do it without maybe repeating so many times, and maybe just to playing the piece a few times from the beginning until the end, and then seeing which version is the best. Because I don't like to repeat different parts, because there's a really feeling of losing that feeling of the piece if it's done too many times. So, but a lot of it is also a frame of mind, and just, you know, trying to be focused and trying to keep the character of the piece alive. So, and then at the end we just try to, you know, choose the best version. But it's a lot of work, because CDs and recordings today are expected to be perfect. So that's why there is a lot of repeating and just trying to make it as perfect as possible. And, you know, that's why the recordings are different, and live performing is different, and those are completely two different things.
Well, if you want to hear any of Anna Vidovich's CDs, you can certainly go to her website. And remind me, is it just annavidovich.com?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Which is spelled ANAVIDOVIC.com. And if you want, of course, to hear her live, you have that opportunity on Saturday, September the 7th, at the Kranich Center for the Performing Arts. Her performance duo recital with Jason Vio will happen at 11 o'clock in the morning. And in fact, we'll be having Jason on the show a week from now. He'll be joining us as well. And thanks very much for indulging me some of these points of curiosity. And best of
Thank
luck in your travels.
Thank you for having me.
Oh,
Thank you.
My great pleasure. Anna Vidovich. Here is, she is in some music from a more recent CD. This came at about the time she, just after she graduated from the Peabody Conservatory, 2005. It's music by Federico Moreno Torroba, also on the Naxos label. These are some selections from his Castillos de España, or Castles of Spain, on Live and Local. Guitarist Anna Vidovich on Live and Local. Our programs are made possible with support from Strawberry Fields Natural Food Store and Cafe. Strawberry Fields offers a wide selection of natural vitamins and body care products for all ages, and healthy back-to-school lunch and snack options. Strawberry Fields on Springfield Avenue in Urbana. We also have support from Kranich Art Museum, presenting a public opening reception for 5 fall exhibitions on Thursday, August 29th from 6 to 7 p.m. with opening comments by exhibiting artist Robert Warner at 6 p.m. Galleries will remain open until 9 o'clock. And you can take WILL with you wherever you go. If you have an iPhone, iPad, or Android device, the new WILL app is free and allows you to stream our AM and FM stations. For more information about how to find the WILL radio app in the App Store or Google Play, visit our website at will.illinois.edu. My guests this portion of Live and Local are William Gillespie and Chandra Watkins, and this should be sort of an interesting segment, at least in part, and this is really the minor part, because William, like myself, is in radio at least at times, and Chandra, like myself, has been in public radio, involved in public radio, at least at times. But that's not why either of them is here. They're here because they're going to be participating. They're two of three participants in a show in Champaign Sunday evening. It's going to be at Indigo Artist Co-op. It's called Callings. We'll find out why, I presume, in which William is going to be doing some reading from well, at least one of his books. I'm not sure what all else. We'll find out that in a moment. Chandra is going to be playing a very fascinating looking, and I'll soon find out, sounding, I'm sure, electric violin. And then they're also going to be joined by guys who has been on the show a few times, and many of our listeners, I'm sure, will know for his work with the band Elsinore, his name Ryan Groff. He's not with us today. He's going to be doing some of his solo work with guitar on that show as well at Indigo Artist Co-op downtown Champaign from 6 to 9 on Sunday. So with that probably sort of too convoluted introduction, Chandra and William, thanks very much for coming on the show.
Our pleasure. Yep.
William, I understand this is really to celebrate your birthday, and you've announced it to me, so I assume I can say it's your 44th.
Sure.
I've said it now. but other than that, what this is something like this you do periodically, annually? Tell us about the event and why Callings.
Well, I guess I'm not one to have one of those mopey, stay-at-home-by-yourself, self-pity birthdays, so... As you can see, I've veered perhaps too far in the opposite direction and created a massive gathering with fantastic musicians and a wonderful venue. It's actually took about 9 months to put together, to find the correct people in the local artist community who reply to emails in order to get the venue and get the sound and the videographer and so forth. Very much looking forward to it. So it's been in the works for a while. I tend to give a reading on my birthday, not every year, but many years. And the first one was called Sprawlings. And everyone since then has been a name that rhymes with that. So there was Squallings in 1998. And in Providence in 2004, Stallings. And now Callings, which also refers to one's occupation, which in my case would be writing literary fiction, and in Chandra's case, playing a brand new custom-built six-stringed electric violin, and Ryan Groff, of course, professional musician and songwriter with a new album on the way.
I want to read a little bit of what's been said about you, William, as a writer. Now, I only learned about this event yesterday, I think, so I haven't had a chance to read any of your writing, I have to say, but I'm fascinated by, first, the name of the book, which I think is your most recent, called The Keyhole Factory, and also by some of the descriptions that people have written, either of you or the book. And let's see. An experimental novel, chunks of poetry interrupt the traditional chapters, graphics appear throughout, and a middle section is horizontal. Okay, now I want to look at it. The author's foray into the inconceivable digs far beneath the trusty surface of cause and effect. He parlays his scientific familiarity to create maddening illustrations showing all we know is consistently less than what we don't. All right, now I'm getting interested in the content of, and here we go. By turns, horrifying, poignant, hilarious, ugly, beautiful, mysterious, poetic, and overall human, all too human. What is The Keyhole Factory about? I have no idea from reading any of that.
The Keyhole Factory is a novel that is in the form of 22 short stories in different literary and sometimes typographic forms that track the stories of a number of characters who weave in and out throughout the various stories during a global calamity that is caused by the outbreak of a military virus and subsequent global plague.
Sounds uplifting.
It does have a happy ending.
Well, that's encouraging. And is that what you're going to be reading from on Sunday and today a little bit?
Oh, no, that was last year's novel. We'll be reading from this year's novel.
The one that is to come?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
It's called Spot. It tells the story of a rock band from outer space who comes to play Earth and the consequences that has.
And would a reviewer of this book, when it's out, make any similar sort of comments about it, would you expect? Or is it entirely different?
It'll be different in that it will be more of a responsibly told story, not as fragmented, no typographic tricks.
Responsibly told, I like that.
I like that too.
But probably similar in that is strange.
But is this a trademark of yours?
It may be. I may not be in a position to judge that. It all seems perfectly straightforward to me, but other people give me funny looks.
Well, that does explain why your portion of Sunday's event is called Spot Dot Literature. So now we know that. So that explanation. And I think we're going to hear a little bit of what you have to play for us first, Chandra, okay, before we hear some reading, but a little bit about the playing. I mean, I said you have this interesting looking electric violin, but your background is as a quote unquote normal classical violinist.
Correct.
You actually played in symphony orchestras and so on. And
I did indeed, and had a love affair with my significant other, which was an old Italian wooden normal violin. Recently sold it at auction on April 28th. In fact, the guy who does the fine instruments for Antiques Roadshow, David Bonsi, flew into Chicago, came down and looked at the instrument and carried it off. And so I thought, 10 years ago, I tried a Mark Wood electric violin and really wanted it. Time to get it. The beauty of this instrument, and I'm going to try to do this on air, it's a completely new construction. It looks as if it's an inverted V at the bottom of the instrument, so that one edge of the V rests on the left shoulder and the other portion of the V rests just below the right shoulder. And then there's a paddle that snugs the chest under the left armpit and a wrap that goes around, so that as I'm sitting here talking, I am hands-free. The instrument is holding itself up.
And you don't have to do it with your chin like normally. And if anybody knows a guitar that I think is called, Mike Pritchard, our sound guy, can correct me on this, the Flying Wedge.
Good.
Flying
one.
V,
yeah.
He said. Okay, Flying, yeah. V. But imagine it as a violin instead,
yeah,
with seven strings. You have somewhat an idea of what it looks like.
Perfect, yes, and they are custom built so that you can get 4, 5, 6, or 7 strings. I did settle for a 6-string for my first attempt. Various people said, don't go to 7 right away, but let's just see what that adds to the musical palette, because you've got the 4 strings of the violin, the E, the A, the D, the G, but then you add the C from the viola. Oops. There's one of the issues with playing this. The strings are rather close together. And the F, oh, from the cello. And if you get the 7th string, you've got the B-flat from the bass. So you've got all that range, which is fabulous.
And
love it.
And why didn't you just pick a normal 4-string electric violin? Or actually, for that matter, a 5-string, yeah, electric violin is semi-normal for an electric.
True. I figure if you're going to push the boundaries, push all the way. And that's why I also chose to have frets on mine, because you can choose fretted, fretless, or phantom frets, which are just painted on for visual reference. And that allows you to sing and play, because you have double stops are much easier to produce. You don't have to think at all or really adjust the pitch much at all. So that allows you to sing and play much more easily, which I said I wasn't going to show today, but I will on Sunday be singing and playing at the same time.
Well, what do you want to do by way of a musical demonstration of this fascinating-looking instrument?
Well, what I would like to do is also give a demonstration of another wonderful toy that came along. Once I plunked down the money, it came along. A looper, which allows you to overdub. So I thought I'd do a Shokin's Farewell. Everybody who watched Ken Burns' Civil War knows this tune. It actually was written by a current musician by the name of Jay Unger, who writes old-sounding tunes very easily. So I'm just going to do a couple rounds of that, and you can hear the instrument as well as the capability that this type of looping technology brings to the table. I would just quit my job and play this day in, day out if I could, but I can't. Thank you. Go.
Well, you know, one of the things I've seen people use looping pedals before in various degrees of complexity. In fact, we had a guy here not long ago do it with a violin and also a guitarist with him, except he had a whole suitcase full of these, of different kinds of effects and so on. And I always thought one of the challenges would have to be remembering somewhat what tempo you did before. I mean, even though you can hear you're hearing yourself played back, but at the same time, you have to be in sync with what you just did over and over again.
And you heard some of that in, you know, I was not perfectly on rhythm. I'm still trying to figure out, there's a slight delay. And sometimes you make the adjustment, and sometimes you don't. But you're right, that is definitely one of the interesting challenges.
William, well, you said that, let me back up and remind listeners that, first of all, you're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. And second, my guests today are William Gillespie and Chandra Watkins, who are two of the three participants in an event on Sunday in downtown Champaign called Callings, which features some reading of a forthcoming novel. Some of Chandra's playing on the electric violin, and then Ryan Groff of Elsinore is going to do some playing and singing as well. This is all at Indigo Artists Co-op. And you said at the outset that this was an event that you took a while to find the right musicians for, as well as other people who are going to be helping to make it happen. How did you find Chandra, and why did you think this would be a good fit for your reading?
Well, we were old friends from back when I was also employed with the American Oil Chemist Society, writing about fats and oils with great rhythm. this is a little embarrassing, but she had been talking up this instrument angel for quite some time, and I wasn't quite sure whether she was exaggerating or whether it was just a little, you know, an infatuation, a temporary fling. But I went over to her house and I heard a demonstration, and I thought, you wanna do this show with me? I actually said that, and she said yes. I just, from the improvisations, I was enchanted by the otherworldly textures she can create. I've always been a real fan of the violin, and this is violin times 20. especially when the violin is taken out of classical music contexts and used as a fiddle or in rock, electric violin in particular. So I thought it would be a wonderful mix with her, with Ryan, his wonderful songwriting, and all that to sort of smooth over the rough edges of what happens when you listen to 45 minutes of text.
Well, we're not going to hear 45 minutes of text today, but we're going to hear some. Okay, so this is from Spot?
This is from Spot. I am trying to avoid the thing that sometimes happens where someone will get up and read an excerpt from a novel and it doesn't really have a beginning or end, and it just doesn't quite satisfy As I mentioned, this is meant to be a responsibly told story with closure, but I'm not going to be able to deliver that to the audience, so my approach is to introduce various characters, and I'm going to introduce the character of Johnny Word, who's a young-ish music fan, visiting his record store, The Analog Anachronism, looking for music by this band he's just heard of, Spot. Johnny Word stopped by the record store Analog Anachronism. He had come to search the bins more thoroughly for the band Spot. His recent find had inspired him to dig in with all earnestness and do what he needed to do, which was to go through every single object for sale in the store and see whether it was Spot, Spot-related, had Spot playing on it, or might have been Spot-inspired, Spot-produced, or even Spot-esque. He would consume every disc and liner note. Spot, he thought. Spot. Somehow he liked the ring of it. It suited him. And if Johnny Word couldn't find any music by them, then nobody else could either. And that made it all perfect. The band was his and his alone. He had direction now, a personality. He could feel his identity sharpen into a carrot-shaped vector now pointing after this band, Spot. Spot was his band now. He could feel it trip off the tongue. He'd go to the bar and tell the others that he was all into this band called Spot. Spot, they'd say, moving in. And the next day, two or three of them would show up here, at this dirty hole-in-the-wall dodecaphonic music store, sneakily looking for Spot, trying to scoop Word. But he wouldn't be scooped. Not this time. There was nothing online about Spot. Ungoogleable. It was his. Spot was the perfect band. And if they actually had some music, that would make everything complete. But today the surly hippie record store owner was not there. Instead, behind the counter was a young woman with a pierced lip and military cap. He was taken aback. Here was something interesting. He had almost lost himself in the search for Spot, but he easily pivoted back into self-consciousness. He would have to intrigue her with his music choices. Nothing too obvious, but not forced either. Natural and interesting, but casual, not concerned with his appearance, but attractive and intriguing nonetheless. Naturally so. Casual. Self-absorbed, but not narcissistic. Confident, but not arrogant. He smoothed his sideburns, then immediately stopped. There was a record by the residents, the Weasel Triptych. Should he pick it up and look at it? Or would that give him away as somebody who is trying too hard to look interesting? Had he already been staring at it too long and given himself away? He picked up the record with forced casualness. Maybe he already had it, his body projected. It was no big deal, really. He just wanted to know which year it was pressed, was what he tried to project to the woman. But he didn't want to buy it. That would just be too obvious. Did he break out into a sweat? He put it back. I already have this. Don't need it, his body said. There was a copy of Blue Beams and Moon Jeans by Captain Beefheart and the Magic Band. He stared at this for some time, too. This wasn't cool. He couldn't go through every record as he had planned. That would really say too much. So Word went to browse in the W section, and he thought while he was there he might even venture all the way to the end of the alphabet. W was safe. He could look at Scott Walker to be eclectic, White Stripes to be alternative, The Who to be mainstream. Once he got into X, he was going to pigeonhole himself as someone who was into new wave music. And Z was a stifling wilderness where he risked looking at Frank Zappa, sending who knows what kind of message to the woman behind the counter. But from W, he could backpedal into the safe haven of the Velvet Underground, through the enigmatic Voivod and Ultravox, until he reached the wide open spaces of R through T, where dozens of handy poses would suggest themselves, provided he was careful not to stumble all the way back into Queen, which he wasn't sure he could manifest the detached humor necessary to pull off. He stole a glance at the woman. She was irresistibly uninterested in him, looking at a record by Emerson, Lake, and Oates. To his shock, his mind articulated the realization in the form of a word. Cute. His hand came away from the record, leaving sweat fingerprints. He imagined the woman and himself living together disinterestedly, paying no attention at all to each other, and this erotic fantasy choked him. Flooded with warm secretions, he stiffly reached for the next record in the rack. Spot live on the outer spiral arm. This was enough to distract him. He looked at the back cover. It was a recording of a concert in Washington, D.C., but the date was printed wrong. According to the sleeve, it was a concert that hadn't happened yet and was 3 weeks in the future. Suddenly, he realized he had let his guard down. But he had to buy this, come what may, whatever message it said about him. It was an uncalculated move, and he might be seen wanting something, which was terribly uncool and made him uncomfortably vulnerable. He needed to regroup. The presence of the cool young woman instead of the fashion disaster of an old man in the tie-dye Jimmy Joplin t-shirt was a bad ambush, a real cluster heck. He took the record up to pay for it, almost tripping over his numb feet, face burning with shame as he went to interact with this perfect woman. "Is this good?" he asked. "No," she smiled. Was she joking?
Well, there's at least some background, I assume, that explains how it is you got into a rock radio show on our fellow community station here called WEFT. You've done a show called Rock Geek. Mm-hmm. And I gather that some of that experience, or at least that interest, shows up in there as well. Wonderful piece of writing. I found myself smiling and laughing quietly a few times. So your previous book, The Keyhole Factory, somebody had indicated hilarious as one of the aspects of it, as well as ugly, poignant, and horrifying. Will we find ugly, poignant, or horrifying elsewhere in the book?
Yes. Poignant might be a stretch, but definitely have worked in ugly and horrifying.
Well, this is so the description of some of the character of Johnny Word from William Gillespie's forthcoming novel, Spot, from which he will read more on Sunday at Indigo Artist Co-op in downtown Champaign, an event that will last from 6 to 9. I should say, too, that there is an exhibition going on there, as there generally is. I think it's the one called Seascapes and Beyond. It was advertised as being one called Facet, but the website shows something just a little bit different right now. And we also have with us here on Live and Local, Chandra Watkins, who's going to be one of two musicians participating in this event, Ryan Groff of Elsinore being the other, who's not with us right now. And so we have next something that's going to combine the two of you, or either, I guess, one after the other.
And it's pretty horrifying, I would say, if I may be so bold as to characterize it.
That said, this will be our debut performance of this folk song, which we think is a folk song, but the version we're going to perform was taken from a musician called Snakefinger and his band, the Vestal Virgins, off their last record before his untimely demise, Night of Desirable Objects, and it's called The Ballad of Sawney Bean / Sawney's Death Dance. When I come down from Liverpool, the day was dull and bleak. I met an old seafaring man, his name was Jack McTeague. He told to me a story about a robber mean who lived in a cave on the Scottish coast, and his name was Sawney Bean. 'Twas in the reign of Jolly James in 1424. His incestuously inbred family patrolled the Galloway shore. They robbed the innocent traveler, but worse than that they did.
They feasted on roasted murdered men, and then their bones they hid. So good King James, he heard of this, and he sent 400 men. On hooks in the cave they found human flesh, and they took the family in. The women they burned in the public square, but not before they'd seen the men bleeding to death with no hands or feet, and their leader, Sawney Bean.
You can hear all this and more from writer and sometimes singer William Gillespie, and also writer and actual violinist Chandra Watkins, along with Ryan Groff. Callings is the name of the event, Sunday from 6 to 9 at Indigo Artists Co-op in downtown Champaign. Well, thanks very much to both of you for coming in on the show today, and have fun on your 40th birth. So is it actually your 40th, your birthday on Sunday?
It is. I was born on Labor Day. Get it?
Oh, good for you. We got it.
I can only hope that I leave the world on Memorial Day to make the joke complete.
It's live and local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. And you're listening to 90.9 WYLL FM and HD Urbana with translator W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music and More for Central Illinois. WYLL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. It's 84 degrees at 5 o'clock.